Thank you. So thanks for our speakers, Alex and Jim. They have to run to another session, unfortunately. So it was good that we had time for a few questions to ask them before they leave. Now, I'd like to follow up with the next talk that is by Xiong and myself. And because Xiong is not here at the meeting, unfortunately, I will give the talk on behalf of him. This question about is uncertainty really a menace or opportunity is a big question, particularly in digital soil mapping and modeling, because the uncertainty assessment, of course, makes things more complicated, more cumbersome, and possibly also more challenging for some of us because we have to go through a longer computational process. But there are many, many reasons why uncertainty assessment really is saliently important, ranging from decision-making support for understanding our prediction maps in much more intricate ways that relate also to soil security or to risk assessment. We can also provide these type of assessments to landowners, to also decision makers like politicians that possibly can make more informed decisions instead of ignoring the information or not even considering an uncertainty assessment. But there's lots of confusion related to uncertainty assessment, and I like to reiterate some of the important terms related also to uncertainty and actually error assessment, which are not really the same. When we talk about verification of a soil map product, we typically talk about demonstrating that the model formalism is correct. Calibration, we prepare our model with the parameter estimates to improve our models as best as we can to produce model output, whereas validation is typically only the assessment using an independent data set that is truly independent. And that's a difficulty for us often to find these independent data sets to assess the accuracy that is consistent with the intended application of our soil model. Whereas error assessment assumes that we know the true state of reality, meaning that we have hardcore measurements that give us the best possible accurate precise values that we can derive to assess our errors. So we are dealing with this spectrum of confidence that ranges from certainty, bounded, unbounded uncertainty to we don't really know. And typically this type of spectrum we can capture quite well using probabilities, where also lots of uncertainty assessment is actually based. Because uncertainty arises because we are aware that we are dealing with a very noisy, complex system that is often not difficult to comprehend. There are many data gaps. And so what we like to see is, of course, clear-cut features that we can distinguish, like clear-cut horizons or also assessments, if you look spatially, horizontally across a landscape here from a bird's eye view, a quick bird satellite image. But in reality, we are dealing with a lot of variation, a lot of uncertainty also that relates to time and space, because soil landscapes are not static, although our soil maps suggest that they are. But of course, they are not. So how can we capture this type of uncertainty? And we have heard in our first talk also a really nice overview and a review of uncertainty assessments. But I like here to reiterate that uncertainty is typically based on probabilities. To quantify the uncertainty, in particular related to parameters that we assess and derive probability density functions. So these are PDFs, not the Adobe PDFs, but really probability density functions. So we have to wrap our mind around this, because here what we aim to do is to assess the uncertainty from a statistical point of view, dependent on space and time, making the assumption that our soil maps are valid for a specific time period, for a specific space or geographic parcel or pixel or region. Now, uncertainty relates to both soil and the environmental properties or the soil-forming factors that we include in our models. And with the PDF, we can typically represent them as is shown over here using for each pixel probability density functions. We see here they can be characterized, but often for simplicity, they are reduced again to the mean and the variance because, of course, to produce maps that shows the full information derived from PDFs is hard to do. And we've seen few examples to work around it, but in essence, it is also more difficult to understand these maps that represent uncertainty information. We've heard already, and I didn't know that my previous talker speakers actually present the same information from the Global Soil Map Project, because here the prediction intervals are used to assess uncertainty, which simply means that which is the range of values within which the true value at any point prediction is expected to be found 9 out of 10 times. And this little graph here shows quite well what is meant with the prediction interval, using an upper prediction interval and lower prediction interval. And we see here also in the middle the model output that is generated from whatever model we use and the observed values and how they relate to each other. So these type of functions can be, of course, also represented across and profiled using, for example, spline function that, in addition to the mean prediction, also give us information about the prediction interval. But we are dealing truly with different types of uncertainties, because uncertainty is really the only certainty there is, and knowing how to live with this insecurity is the only security. This comes from Paulus, which indicates that sometimes it is extremely difficult to actually assess the uncertainty, in particular in areas that are sparsely sampled, where we have difficulties to really know what the soils are in a specific region. So that would be the epistemic uncertainty. The parameter uncertainty is actually more easy to capture because this can be quantified more easily using, for example, positional information, measurement assessment, the quality of our measurements derived from the laboratory or from the field, and spatial and temporal uncertainty. But lots of uncertainty is introduced by our models that we use, the model structural error. For example, here, depending on the choice of our method and approach, statistical or geostatistical or mixed methods introduce, of course, each of them and specific amount of uncertainty in our model. Even the users, those of us who use and run these models, right? Sometimes we use the same method, but we have still different output. How come, right? This might be simply a user-specific uncertainty related to an application or algorithmic uncertainty. And these are, of course, only examples. Now, Bayesian statistics offer us a tool set to assess uncertainty because they are focused on assessing the variables from a probabilistic perspective, assessing first the prior PDFs, summarized information focused on the parameters included in our model. And usually this is kind of a uniform distribution function with some parameter ranges of lower and upper bounds. But as we run our model and data knowledge become available and we use the Bayes theorem to actually typically through multiple iterations or simulations derive our joint posterior PDF, we converge the model and have the ability also to truly assess the uncertainty with the function that I showed you on the previous slide. But still, these applications are not widespread because in many publications you will find a prediction and maybe in validation, but there's no uncertainty assessment attached to it. few applications are listed here, focused on soil salinity, soil thickness, pH, or soil organic carbon. For example, in Menasne paper, quite a beautiful example, using Markov chain Monte Carlo simulations together with Bayesian geostatistics. And this is quite similar to an application from our group that we conducted and applied in Florida, focused on soil organic carbon stock assessment, Bayesian geostatistics with three Markov Monte Carlo Markov chains with 15,000 iterations. And we have two models that are compared on the slide. The first one uses the spatial random effect, the second model uses both fixed and spatial random effects. In essence, as you can see here also on the right-hand side, in the first model only the parameters from the geostatistical modeling are included, whereas we have in the model two also fixed effects coming from covariates that were included in the model. And here it's available water capacity, organic matter from Sorgo, albedo, Landsat, first principal component, compound topographic index, and leaf area index. But important what we can learn from these models that actually in terms of in model comparison also identified by the defiance information criteria, the model 2 performs better than model 1. We can also see internal in terms of how the posterior standard deviation is actually distributed. As we can see here, for example, the highest values comes from the range value, the spatial autocorrelation range, which also in terms of the posterior mean has the highest value. And that is important information. So if you don't really hit this value right, then also our uncertainties, of course, are larger. But these changes, if we look at model number 2, where we compare and include fixed and also the spatial random effects, because you see, for example, focus on the range value, now the uncertainty is actually reduced for that specific parameter. So we can learn a lot about these values, also comparing them internally with each other, but also across, because here the posterior SD compared to the posterior mean is quite important indication how good actually our model perform and where this uncertainty is coming from, so that we can improve these models also in the future to focus on those parameters that have actually the highest uncertainty. Now, in terms of comparison, as you can see here, the models are not dramatically different. Model 2 is slightly better in terms of some of the evaluation statistics like the R-square and the root mean square deviation. But if you look at the validation of the prediction intervals here on the bottom of the slide, I hope you can see it, they are actually quite similar in terms of giving us an indication, for example, the percent of validation soil organic carbon observations falling within a specific prediction interval. Right, this one is tighter and this one is larger. But these are quite good results. Actually, models performed reasonably well, what we understand from a digital soil mapping perspective. What model 2 allows us to map out is actually a little bit more variability, also in terms of the mean predictions, but also in terms of the prediction interval variability compared to model number 1. That I don't show here because of time limitations. The important is also to look at the mean prediction relative to the standard deviation map, because we see also exactly where a lot of the variability is located. This is in southern Florida, where actually the carbon values are also quite high. That's the Everglades agricultural area. But we see also pockets of higher standard deviations throughout the state. Overall, they most of them actually fall into the green classes on the lower end, which of course we like to see in our models. Another technique that can be used to assess uncertainty, also using PDFs, is conditional sequential Gaussian simulation. These type of stochastic simulation techniques also give us the capability here applied to a small area the Blue Cypress Marsh Conservation Area in Florida to assess the uncertainty explicitly. We see the mean prediction map for total phosphorus here in the center, but also the smallest realization and the largest one. But as you can see from these maps, they are very different, right? 100 iterations were used to produce these type of models that also allow us to capture some of the uncertainty in these models. And these type of approaches also can be used to assess probabilities, you know, for example, combined with risk assessment, where probabilities exceeding a specific critical nutrient enrichment threshold of 450, 550, and 650 are shown. And that is quite important because decision makers, for example, in this case from the water management district, could use these maps to make decisions in terms of assessing truly the uncertainty and also the predictive capability at the same time of these type of maps. So I'd like to conclude my talk with a few citations and quotes. The first one really reminds us that uncertainty is truly an uncomfortable position, so we have to get really used to it, to understand it, to map it out, to quantify it as best as we can. Because, yeah, as Voltaire said, but certainty is truly an absurd one. Eckhart Tolle gives us here a little bit more, with some more optimism. He says, when you become comfortable with uncertainty, infinite possibilities open up in your life. And that's a positive outlook. So I hope that I excited you to do also your uncertainty assessment and include them in your future MET products. Thank you. So I stayed in time, so there's time for, I think, one or two short questions.
I have a question about your amazing geostatistic approach. Now you're defining fixed effects for your covariates. That means you're more using hyperparameters for your uncertainty, the precision of those covariates, or how do you? I'm not really familiar with a fixed effect in a Bayesian sense.
Well, here the fixed effect means simply that the covariates were used to make predictions, to improve, in essence, also the predictive capability of this model, in addition to the geostatistical, typically geostatistical parameters like sill, nuggets, and range that are typically used, derived from the variogram, to make predictions, right, in a spatial sense. So here it's in combination. In that sense, it is actually a mixed model, right, that has very different type of approaches to deal with it. But as we know in Bayesian geostatistics, here the assumption is that soil organic carbon is related also to specific properties, like those six that were used, for example, soil moisture specific properties, typically biotic properties, and they typically help to stabilize our predictive capability, in addition to considering the spatial context and spatial autocorrelation of our sample sites. So in that sense, it is actually quite a nice technique that is quite straightforward and have been applied also in many multivariate geostatistical settings. But the advantage of Bayesian geostatistics is that it can assess explicitly the uncertainty. And that's really, I think, also a cutting edge that really elevates our work a little bit more. Okay.